All right. Turning your Bibles to Proverbs 12. Proverbs 12. Want to get some scriptures. We'll share Proverbs 12, 24. Our main verse, Lem, Proverbs 24, 30. Johnny, Proverbs 12, 24, the second time. Kenny, Matthew 9, 37. Colby, Colossians 1, 29. And the third time, Preston, read Proverbs 12, 24. That'll be the third time. Okay, we're going to look at this verse in Proverbs. The old statement says, the dictionary is the only place where success comes before work. And so if you show me any man of God that you admire, and I don't care who it is, if you admire them, I guarantee that they will be a hard worker, because this is one of the simple ingredients of successful ministry on any level, as it takes stinking hard work. So Proverbs 12, 24, I'm going to do a lesson called Diligence Rules. Proverbs 12, 24, Will.
The diligent will take control, but the lazy will put to forced labor. Will be put to forced labor.
Okay, I like that. What translation is that, Will? The diligent
ISV.
Will.
ISV.
ISV? Okay. All right, International Standard Version. Okay, New King James. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man we put to forced labor. And then the New Living Translation says, work hard and become a leader, be lazy and become a slave. Diligence rules. Let's talk. I want to talk about the laziness trap for a moment. The laziness trap. This text speaks about lazy men in verse 24. It says the lazy man will be put to forced labor. Laziness. To be lazy is a lack of desire or an unwillingness to work. And it's an interesting word picture. You know, some of our English words, they just mean something, what they say. But in Hebrew, sometimes they were pictures that would be put in people's minds. And one of these, this word lazy, it's like on a bow, for a bow and arrow. Lazy is a bowstring that has no tension. It's slack. It's not being strained, but also it's not useful. You cannot hunt, you cannot aim, you can't shoot with a lazy bowstring. That's literally the word picture. So Proverbs is written, and you'll discover that is one of the major themes of the book of Proverbs. Wisdom and fools. Another one is laziness and hard work. Those are themes that you'll find throughout the book of Proverbs. So, lazy. The idea of someone who doesn't want to work, or they have no desire to work. So, lazy men lack understanding. Why would you be lazy? You're lazy if you lack understanding. Proverbs 24:30.
I went by the field of the lazy man and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding.
Devoid of understanding. Another translation says the vineyard of one with no common sense. So we think of laziness being, you know, your muscles, but the Bible says this is your mind. Someone who is lazy lacks, they're not thinking clearly. So they fail to understand what it takes to succeed at anything. I don't care what you want to do in life. You want to get good at music. You want to succeed in money. You want to succeed in ministry. Many men, they have no concept of what is going to be involved in success on any level. And that is, it takes hard work. It takes very, very hard work. And then they lack understanding. Not only do they they don't understand that it takes hard work, but often there's a lack of understanding in a lazy man. They don't know what they need to do. What are the things that they need to do in order to succeed? There are practical steps. I want to be a man of God. Okay, what is it you need to do today to become a man of God? A lazy man has never thought that through, so therefore they have an unwillingness to work and to apply themselves in that way. Lazy men, why are men lazy? They're lazy because they live by their feelings. Here's the bummer that every young man learns when he starts his getting a job is work sometimes is not enjoyable. I don't know if any of you have jobs that you just wake up in the morning and go, oh man, I cannot wait to get there. Some days are not like that. I love my job, but there are days when it's just stinking hard work, boring details. That is what's involved. And so lazy men live by their feelings. I don't feel like working. I don't feel like going to work. So therefore, they have a lack of labor and a lack of desire for that. So in this text, it gives us a simple thought about this. Laziness ruins the future. What kind of future are you going to have? That is going to depend on whether you are a diligent man, which is what the New King James says. Are you a hard worker or you're lazy? Because that will determine your future. Verse 24 in the New King James, the lazy man will be put to forced labor. I read you the New Living. Be lazy and become a slave. So what that is talking about is that a man who is lazy cannot determine what happens in the future. I want my finances to be. I want my marriage to be. I want my ministry to be. If you're lazy, you don't determine that. That is what it's talking about. People determine it. If you're lazy, you are never going to lead. You're never going to be a boss. You're never going to own a business. And so people will determine your future or circumstances. You are at the mercy of every negative problem in life. And so we're now applying this to being a man of God. I'm not here to give you a business seminar, but we're talking about ministry. Lazy disciples never get where they want to be. They have felt called at various times in conferences, in discipleship classes. They're excited, man, I want to be a man of God. I felt God stirring me this week. But the problem is they don't have the work ethic. They don't think through what I need to do. And they don't apply themselves in hard, boring work to achieve that. So years will go by. They'll never get where they need to be. A lazy man cannot have a good future. And then we're talking, if you become a pastor someday, there are pastors that will never grow in themselves. Their preaching is stuck at the same level that it was years ago. Their skills in ministry are stuck because it takes hard work. And so that is a trap. Laziness is a trap. For any comfort that you get by extra sleep, by not being tired, by not having to do boring, difficult things, you're actually ruining your future. Let's talk secondly about the need for hard work. Bible principle here is that anything good in life requires hard work. What is it you want? I don't care what it is. You want a good marriage? It's going to take hard work. It's not luck. This is why if I can just find somebody with 29 points of compatibility, then it'll be easy. We'll be in love. No. Good marriages take hard work. Man was placed in the garden to work. God put him in a garden. There was great potential, but he was required to work for in order for it to be good. Many of the parables that Jesus tells, he tells parables about fields, about farms, about dirt. And remember, in those days, none of these people had a John Deere tractor. None of them had a laser-guided, you know, GPS system that would guide them and the automatic watering system. it was stinking hard work there. So he tells these parables about the kingdom. How does the kingdom of heaven operate? How do good things in God operate? How does good things in ministry operate? It's dirt. There's potential. You could have something very, very good in that dirt, but it's going to take a lot of hard work to release that. The things of God require hard work. Verse 24, I think the second time. Who had that the second time?
The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put forced labor.
Okay, the hand of the diligent, New Living Translation says, work hard. Matthew 9:37, did I give that out?
Yeah. He said to his disciples, the harvest is great, but the workers are few.
Okay, so harvest, souls. We want people to be saved. Common word is we want revival. Okay, but Jesus says it's going to take hard work. That's what it takes. It takes hard work to go on your free time to outreach. It takes hard work to work with new converts. It takes hard work to come up with outreach ideas and prepare things. Colossians 1:29.
That's why I work and struggle so hard, depending on Christ's mighty power that works within me.
Okay, that's why I work and struggle so hard in that translation. To this end, I also labor. Here's the Apostle Paul, the most successful pastor that has existed, and yet he says, what I work hard, that is what it requires. So let's talk about the process of working hard, because working hard doesn't have to be muscles. If you want to work hard, here's the process of working hard. Number one, you have to decide what you want. New King James, the hand of the diligent. The word diligent actually means to decide. Okay, so he's talking about hard work, but before you apply effort, he says you decide. That's something every man has to do. You have to decide, where do you want to be a year from now? Where do you want 5 years from now? What do you want to be? What do you want if you're married, marriage, what do you want it to look like 5 years from now? What do you want your ministry to look like a year from now, 5 years from now? You have to decide it. That you can't just apply work randomly. You decide. Number two, you have to work to understand it. This is not just simply exerting yourself with muscles. You have to, first of all, what do I want? Secondly, I need to understand, how do I get there? Asking questions requires thinking, and thinking sometimes is hard work. You have to consider, okay, planning involves a course. Here's where I am. There's where I want to be a year from now, 5 years from now. What is it going to take from here to there? If you don't know, you have to ask. That's a part of ministry. This is foundational to the culture of our church, is we ask questions. Is men who are hungry for God and want to do something for God, we give an opportunity for them to ask questions so you understand. This is why I am so passionate about teaching men how to preach. It's not just simply spend more hours hitting the books. But if you don't understand the process of it, you're going to work hard at maybe doing bad things or the same frustrating thing. You understand. Once you work it out, you can apply yourself pointedly and get very, very good. The third thing then is, if you've decided what you want and you've worked out how to get there or what is needed, you have to work hard at it. The hand of the diligent, that means you work hard every day. Hard work is required when you feel like doing it. There are days when I just cannot wait. I am so excited to study, to work on things I'm wearing. There are other days I am not excited. Doesn't matter. Diligence is I work hard at it every day. I work hard at when it's rewarding. There are some of the things I do it, and man, I get reward. Look at what it did. There are times when it's not. Doesn't matter. I'm going to work hard. Work hard when it's exciting. Work hard when it's boring. This is actually what inspired me for this is the prophet Jerry Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld, the comedian, is very interesting. He did a commencement speech recently, but he did an interview. Listen to this interview. He's applying this to comedy, and this is what he said. When I was starting out, I used to sit down and write, talking about writing comedy, writing jokes, a couple of times a week. Then one day, I watched construction workers, after lunch, go back to work, trudging down the street. It was like a revelation to me. These guys don't want to go back to work after lunch, but they're going. That's their job. And I said, if they can exhibit that level of dedication for that job, I should be able to do the same for mine. So he began to work. He said, learn to accept your mediocrity. No one's really that great. You know who's great? The people who just put a tremendous amount of hours into it. It's a game of tonnage. So Jerry Seinfeld said, I started working my butt off, applying myself diligently, just like a worker would do on a construction job. I Googled yesterday, Jerry Seinfeld's net worth is now over $1 billion. He turned down a final, he quit, what was it? What was his show? It was Seinfeld, right? The final season, they wanted to come back. They offered him $110 million a year. All he had to do was probably work 30 weeks for 110, and he turned it down. He didn't want to do that. Partly because he didn't need to. Worth $1 billion, but Jerry Seinfeld said, I work. I work at it. That is true. People often, you know, when I travel, Pastor Greg, how do you put out, you know, sermons and teaching series and now write a book? Because I work. I work my butt off. I get up very early every morning. I am extremely diligent at working hard. Guys, there are things you can't choose in life. Do you know you can't choose your IQ, your intelligence quotient? You can't choose to have a genius brain. I want to be the smartest guy in the room. That's not up to you. In some ways, you can't choose talent. There are things, if you are non-musical, I don't care how much you practice, it ain't going to work. You're not going to sing if it ain't in you. Okay? But there is one thing you can choose. I mean, there is a couple things, but we're only focusing today. You can choose to work hard. So with my limited, I often tell guys to encourage them. I do not believe that I have exceptional intelligence. It's not that I have this incredible talent, but I have decided what I want. I've worked out how do I need to get there, and I work my butt off. I can choose that. And when I do that, then I'm believing that God will help me. Every man here, you can choose to be diligent. Every man here, you can choose to work hard at being a man of God. Third thing, our text says diligence rules. The first point we said, laziness determines your future in negative ways. Our text says hard work determines your future. Proverbs 12:24, this the third time.
Hard work and become a leader. Be lazy and become a slave.
Okay. Work hard and become a leader, or the hand of the diligent will rule. So in some ways, there are things you can't choose all that you're going to be in life that God picks. He chooses us for certain things. But in many ways, you determine your own future. Okay? God has a calling. You determine, A, will you get there? And B, how good will you be at it? You determine that. And our text speaks, the version that Preston just read said, you lead. Hard work, in the New King James, says you rule. You rule others, meaning you can lead them. hard work will give you influence with people. If you're a hard worker on your job, I guarantee your boss is going to notice that. Who typically gets promoted? Hard workers. They don't find the lazy butt who they're not even sure if he's going to show up every day, and they're looking for him because he's off disappearing behind the building, being lazy. That's not the guy that they put in charge. That's not the guy that they pay extra, right? You lead. Other people notice it. This is in the things of God, men who have decided what they want, worked out how to get there, and work hard at it. At some point, other people are going to notice it. That's the fascinating thing to me about preaching is, in preaching, once I worked out and honed in on what I need to do to be a good preacher, I just started working my butt off. And I'll never forget the surprise, because I used to come to conference and, man, you know, looking at the schedule, and it'd be like, I cannot wait for that guy to preach. And the first time that I had someone come and talk to me and they were talking about my preaching and they were looking forward, it was a shock to me. It's like, you're looking forward to my preaching? Like, I'm looking forward to that guy's preaching? But that's simply this scripture come to life. I had dedicated myself and worked my butt off, and the inevitable result is then it gives you influence with people. In the Bible, God blesses hard work. God watches workers. You better understand this. He watches workers to reward them and to promote them. We read about Rachel, who Eleazar comes with the camels. He's watching how she works. Hey, could you get some water? Every camel drinks, I don't remember, it was either 30 to 40 gallons or 50 to 60 gallons. She is letting down a bucket by hand, pulling it up, pouring it out. That's hard work. But he's just watching. It wasn't about the camels. It was about all the treasure that he had loaded onto those camels. He wanted to give it to somebody. And he said, if I can find a hard worker, you're the one. But that's a picture of God. Ruth is gleaning in the heat. It's harvest time. It's hot. She's out in the field picking up scraps. But Boaz is watching. I've heard of you. I'm watching you. And then they have a great future. She's rewarded, marries the owner of the land. She's in the line of Jesus Christ. That's why you should work as hard as you can. Do the best that you can. There's no point in doing anything half-heartedly in life. Give it all you got. When I was in a band, before I was a pastor, when I was in a band, I worked hard at being good. I worked. I was up at night, getting up early in the morning. I was working in my lunch hour, working on songs, writing lyrics, trying to get better at things. When you do the best you can, then God adds his blessing. So we do what we can do. I said, I can't choose to be the smartest. I can't choose to be the most talented. I can choose to work hard. When I do that, God adds what he is to the equation. And so the Bible says that diligence rules. Okay, let's open for some questions. Something you want to ask. First of all, about diligence.
So you mentioned that when you figured out like things that you needed to do to help you, like just to be a better preacher, what are some things, some practical things that I guess would apply to all of us?
Well, I gave you yesterday the series on preaching. The main thing is when I understood what makes a good sermon, it is a textual sermon with one theme. Once I understood that, my preaching changed. Because then that was the one thing I was focusing on in every passage that I was going to preach for. I was looking for one theme. What is the main idea of this passage? When I did that, I used to preach three sermons in one. They had nothing to do. Point two had nothing to do with point one. Point three had nothing to do with point. It was simply, if I see it, baby, you're going to eat it. That's so. I made stew each week that who knows what was in there. It was like when I was a bachelor. I was not a very successful bachelor. My idea of cooking was what's in the pantry. I was just pouring stuff in. It's like And every once in a while, I was like, hey, that's pretty good. But other times, I was like, what is that? My preaching used to be like that. When I worked out textual instead of topical, I'm not just going to preach on grace in general and find a bunch of scriptures. I'm preaching from one passage with one theme, and then that theme tells me what should be in and what should not be in a sermon. That absolutely changed my preaching. And that is what I teach men everywhere around the world. Yep.
When you work hard, how do you ensure that you're not letting your work, like, well, this is going well because of my work? Like, how do you stay focused on reality, you know, knowing that God has to move and all of that?
What kind of work, Phil?
Let's say, you know, ministry work. You know, you're working on your evangelism, working on, you know, just all the labors that are involved in ministry. And let's say you're seeing success. You know, how do you just keep a right mind about that? You know, when you are working hard and you know it, I think it could be easy to let the work kind of like get to your head. Where, yeah, I did this and I did that. I did this. And of course.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a very broad subject, Phil. But in one sense, you know, hard work at the end of the day has to have results. There has to be some kind of results. I'm just working hard, but no one is ever getting saved or no one is locking in, then I need to change something. So there are certain areas where you have to, that's why you have to think, you have to quantify what's a win here. So in evangelism, it's souls and fruit that remains. That is the goal. In studying, it's the process. Do I understand the process? Can I find a text, find the main idea, and develop it to some level?
Yeah, so, I guess I was thinking more along the lines of success. Like, souls are getting saved.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
But not wanting to.
But then life has God has designed life to have a whole series of self corrections, right? So if you get big headed, somebody's going to let you know about that, or it's going to cause you problems. Like Uzziah, he got big headed, and the priest wanted to fight him. So that's conflict is a sign of pride, right? When we get filled with pride and focus too much on one thing, it causes conflict in our marriage, for instance. So life has self-corrections. Most people, it's not possible to go through life and totally be unaware of what's not helpful, because you're getting warned now. Whether you pay attention to them, that's another thing. But God's designed that. That's why church is with people, because everything you are will affect other people. At some point, they'll let you know, hey, dude, you're acting like a jerk, or people want to fight you, or no one wants to talk to you. Those are like, hey, apparently I'm doing something wrong. That's why God doesn't say, all right, move to a mountaintop by yourself. Because then you'd just be like reading the Bible like, I am awesome. Because there's no one around to say, no, you're not. Yeah. Good. Daniel.
Do you always try to evaluate and identify areas that you can grow in personally?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a thinker. I'm evaluating myself, I'm evaluating the church, I'm evaluating a lot of things, yeah. You can't do anything good in life without thinking. And thinking is work. And thinking is no fun, because if you're honestly thinking, then sometimes the conclusions you're reaching aren't enjoyable, right? There's a problem. Every time there's a problem, I'm there. The suspect list is small, right? So who is responsible for this? Apparently I have something to do with this, right? That's a form of thinking that is not enjoyable, but it has to be done. Yeah, you got to be a thinker. You got to be able to analyze. Yep.
How do you implement hard work into your kids? Because me growing up, I was implemented from my dad. I grew up on a ranch with animals, and that's how he showed me how to be a hard worker, but I don't have any animals.
Yeah, so normally it's chores and tasks around the house is how, that's what we, you know, the most basic, clean your room, right? That was a starting task for us in our house, clean your room. And then there were things that we left outside, and so, you know, you're starting to learn those tasks, then I guess you can, there may be chores around the house beyond your room. Now, my room was always messy enough. That was a major task to get into. So, yeah, it just has to be around the house, yep. I think, yep.
Esther, how do you know if you're working hard, like truly working hard? Because I feel like there's been times where I feel like I'm working hard, and then my wife's like, you're so lazy, or whatever. But then there's other times I feel like I'm not doing enough, and my wife's like, are you kidding me? You're like doing everything. And so how do you know when you're like, okay, I'm working hard?
Oh, you know, I don't know, Devin, but I don't know anybody who's just like, you are aimed in one direction and forevermore you're fine. Life has course corrections, right? I'm too much feeling smug, and then in some way it's revealed to me that I'm not actually working hard enough. Other times I'm taking too much responsibility, and so, you know, life is, when you drive, police say one of the things they look for is they look for people who are weaving heavily. They also look for people who hug the line and follow perfectly, because normal drivers don't do that. Normal driving is little corrections, right? Life is little corrections. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's, you'll be doing course corrections for the rest of your life. It's a normal part of life.
As a leader, is hard work naturally infectious or caught by other men, or how do you inspire that? In my mind, I think if you just exude the example, that is sufficient, but is it?
It all depends. I pastored in South Africa, where the official unemployment rate of all ages was 37%, and in some ages be up to 75%. So some of those guys had never had a job, ever, in their life. So they didn't understand work. So when we built the building, first of all, in stages, one of the things, I had to literally teach them how to work, right? So, you know, here's an example is in South Africa, you build brick and then you render it, which is cement, plaster, but then you had to chase, which is with a grinder, that's where you're going to put in the conduit for the electrical, and then you paint. So one day I came and the guy was painting, but we hadn't cut holes, and so I began to teach them the principle of, you never work twice. So if you paint, but then we're going to cut channels, and then we got to render, and then you got to paint again, so that means you're going to be working twice. Right? They had never worked a job where simple things like that have been explained. Ovidiu Rusu, again in communist Romania back then, none of them had ever had jobs. They're all young. And he said Richard Brooks taught them how to work. So one of the things they got for a place for a church was an old barn. And he said hundreds and hundreds of nails had been pounded for various reasons in the floor. So he said Richard Brooks would mark out in chalk or in some way an area that was just covered in nails. And he said, your job is to get every nail in that area. Don't leave this area until every nail. Ovidiu Rusu talks about it today. He said, that taught me how to work. Diligence and apply it. So it depends. There are some guys you are teaching them a work ethic, but then you, example does inspire. I mean, there is that element. A guy who has a fairly good idea of how to work, but maybe he just is inspired. One of the things that, some of the places I go, I'm telling you what people tell me, this is not a self-assessment, but they are inspired by everywhere I go, they see, I got to work, right? I don't have time to play today. No, I have a Sunday school to crank out. I got to do this. They see me in conferences. I go to conferences to work. I'm not there to listen to every sermon. I can't, because I got Sunday coming when I get home. I got two more conferences after this. So they see me everywhere with my laptop out. I'm working away because I have to. And so there are guys that they're learning diligence, like how do you put out material as though it's this superior, an angel appears to me. They see that I work hard, and that inspires them to work harder, which is, that's a good thing, right?
Okay.
So it's both.
And so, and that can teach people to work. Can it also put in them the want to work?
Yes, if they see the blessing of it, right? So one of the things, if you work hard at preaching, men are inspired. Preachers want to preach better, or they enjoy good preaching. So if you can connect, you can become a better preacher. If you understand the process, you work your butt off, you can preach better. So that is inspiring, yes, in certain ways. Yeah.
So kind of piggybacking on that same thought, when you're working with, like say you see potential in a man and you've tried several things to try to, you know, encourage him to get involved or to work harder because he's got potential, there's talent there, and either he doesn't see it or he just lazy and doesn't want to do it, is there like a way to trigger that where he makes that change, or is it just a matter of just praying?
Well, the first thing, when you say a guy can't see it, the basis of my ministry is inspiration. So you have to get people involved. People will do most what they're inspired to do. So inspiration gives them the end result. That's always what you have to do. So you don't inspire people to witness, for example, by, you need a witness. That doesn't work. You inspire people to witness by what where you're telling story. I tell stories of witnessing, of life transformation. I tell stories of people who got saved and they died the next day. So you're talking about, you know, stories of guys who witnessed and the man said, I was standing here to commit suicide at the train station, you know. So that's an end result. Imagine your life, you could touch your family. Your life could change your community. So that's inspiration. That's true of discipleship. That's true of getting involved in ministry. Ministry is you can do something that would help other people enter the presence of God. Whatever you do in church, that's why we're doing it. You're not simply ushering, counting, singing, playing music, anything we do in church, greeting people at the door. We are creating a place where people can be touched. So you got to inspire people clearly. Because you know it, never assume that other people understand it. In fact, assume that they don't understand it. So always you are inspiring by the end result. Discipleship is that way. I didn't become a disciple because my father told me, you know, what kind of, you know, the women are better men than you are, you know. Is that he inspired us, that God can use your life. You can make impact. So that's the inspiration factor. The second is, of course, we have guys in church. There are guys that are not here this morning because they're lazy, right? They just can't get out of bed. They want to be men of God. They, at conference, they get stirred, but they can't get out of bed. And that's a common problem. They pray for a day, 2 days, and then we don't see them for 2 months. They got to work that out. That's the problem, is you got to get out of bed. You got to work hard. That's something that is between them and God. Those guys, I have to leave them until they make up their mind what they want. But a guy who doesn't see it, that's different. That's my job. My job is to pray for them, because only God can open their eyes. Flesh and blood didn't reveal this to you, but it's my job to cast vision so that it has the greatest impact or chance of causing them to want it, right? So those are two things. My responsibility, their responsibility. They both go together. So I don't feel bad. I don't feel guilty. The guys who aren't here this morning, the guys who have been around forever and are going nowhere, I don't feel guilty about them. I don't like, I'm a failure as a pastor because they're not doing the will of God. Nope, that's on them. But guys who don't understand, that's on me. That's my job. That's Jesse's and Steven's and Chris's and, you know, Diego's. That's our job, is to cast vision and then pray that God does the miracle in them. Good. Lev?
So when it comes to, you mentioned inspiration and people, they get focused on the blessing or they see the result, and but they're not, you're not seeing action in their life, you're not seeing them put in the work. Does that just relate back to they haven't decided in their mind or made that? They see the result, they want that, but they haven't thought it through to where they say, what do I have to do now?
Yep, or literally physical laziness, they just don't like work. That's possible. So you cast vision in a big picture, right? That's in a big sense. You cast vision in small ways that show them how to get there. That's the point of serious men. Serious men is it's not, the real value of serious men is not actually the lesson that's taught. The real value is giving men opportunity to ask questions. Because what is important to you, you can ask that will help you know how to get there. That's you gotta work both of those in. So sometimes the inspiration is not that they're not big picture inspired. I want to be a man of God. I want to get sent out. It's that they don't realize this is what it takes. This is what you can do right now to get there. So you gotta work both of those out. Phil?
When you're working or you have something to do, and you know, sometimes you said hard work is it's not fun, but you just do it anyway. Do you have any strategies for getting through those times when you're tired and work is hard, or you're just, whatever you're doing is boring, and you have like a strategy to like get past that?
You said when I'm tired, I'm always tired. Bro.
I just said that because you were saying, like there's just times when I know I could do this. And it's just like, I'm just not feeling it. And
yeah, so it is just a matter of, I will not. I chain myself to the desk. I'm not leaving.
Wow.
There are days it's like, I will not leave until I have this sermon cranked out. So that's what it takes. I worked last night until 8:30. And just, I got sermons, I got studies, I got things coming up. So in one sense, to me, Phil, I do very good under pressure. Pressure is my friend. It's very good for me. So I am under a lot of pressure because I don't have the luxury in the live stream era. I don't have the luxury of having one sermon that I can preach 27 times around the world. I normally can preach it once sometimes. I can preach it two, maybe three, and it's done. I got to have new material. So my schedule means I have no choice. I do not want to go, I don't want to arrive in a place, I'm going to McMinnville Monday, and I'm going to say, folks, I just wasn't feeling it. I got nothing to say. Hey, you want a few jokes? You know, does that look like a dog? Right? So, you know, that's the joke. I go to the doctor, like, they're talking about health. You know, you don't have any stress in your life, do you? Oh, no. But stress is my friend. That's how I view it. Pressure is a privilege. That's a great line from Diary of a CEO. Pressure is a privilege. Not everybody in the world has my schedule because maybe they don't have anything to say. So it's a privilege. I work my butt off. It's demanding, but that's actually good for me. I have mapped out. I was working through yesterday a document that I make, and I make it in 2 to 3 month blocks. I have a document on my computer called Sermons Needed for May and June. And I map it out. How many do I need for Guam? How many do I need for McMinnville? What do I need for Redlands? What holidays are coming up, which is Father's Day? Got a wedding. So I got it mapped out what I need for 2 months. And I got to work. And I had been working last week, and I thought that I had done all my sermons for McMinnville, so I moved on to Guam, which is later on. I'm working away, and then I went back to, I wanted to look at the sermon. I realized I hadn't finished one of the McMinnville ones. That's why I was working last night till 8:30. So it just, it's pressure. That makes me, I don't have a choice. You got to make yourself. Yep.
So, you know, having a regular job where you work 9 to 5 and you can just, you know, you come home, you can put it away and be with your family and stuff like that. So in ministry and maybe even like being self-employed or whatever, you mentioned you worked till 8:30 last night. So how do you balance and make sure that you're giving enough time to your family and that you're not, you know.
But the beauty of my job, though, is it's flexible. So I can work when I want. So it's not 8 to 5 for me. So I carve out, I have lunch with my wife most days of the week. I have dinner with her every night of the week. So I have flexibility. The other day, I lost hours and hours of work time. I went with my wife. We went and hung out. We had lunch. We went shopping and, you know, looked at a few things. And so I balance very much. I am, you know, any of my staff, I tell them, I do not want them to be work slaves and neglect their family. That's not healthy. So that's the beauty, is flexibility. In that you have to, so that is deliberately carving out time. Secondly, you have to recognize the signs. Your wife and your children, they don't need the same amount of time every day. Sometimes it's demanding, I need more, they need more. Sometimes there's conflict arising because you are not giving enough. You got to pay attention to the signs. As I say always, if you wake up and your wife is sharpening a knife above your head, you can probably say, I think you're not happy. It's a sign. So you work that out. But that is the beauty. I mean, that's what I said to my wife the other day. We went out for lunch. We're enjoying ourselves. I said, what a blessing that I have the luxury of. I want to spend time with my wife. I can do that. But then the other thing is, that's why I am so passionate about teaching, preaching. Exactly what his question was. If I can teach a man how to preach textually, find one theme, he can get his sermons done much, much faster. I just gave him potentially hours and hours more per week that he can spend with his wife and children. That's why everywhere I go, I teach men how to preach. Because many of our pastors are working pastors. So I'm full-time. I have the luxury when I'm home of spending time with my wife. Some guys, they don't have that luxury, right? So that's my goal, is to try to teach men how to have more time, because I do not want families to be neglected. And you can do both. It's a balance. I can't teach you percentages, but it can be done. You can do everything you need to in life successfully. So will you do it successfully? Immediately, probably not. You got to learn, trial and error, course corrections, but it can be done. My wife is very, you can ask her, she says she is very happy and satisfied in life with what she's doing. Now, there are times when she's not, that means course correction. I got to fix that. But overall, yeah. Good questions. Anybody else? Daniel?
Is there a mentality you embrace to love hard work your flesh doesn't like, to know that this is good for me?
Well, Daniel, once you understand the reward of hard work, at first, hard work is just no fun. There is an element. God made men to work hard. There is something satisfying in the same way. I don't know. Will you work construction? Is there something satisfying about working, giving your best, and making something at the end of a day? Now, I'm sure it's not enjoyable every single day, but that's how I feel about work. I felt good when I went to bed last night. I worked my butt off yesterday. That's a good feeling. I know when I preach this morning, I'm giving it my best. I didn't throw together 2-minute noodles. and you know, rice-a-roni to feed the people, right? That's a good feeling. I like what it does when men are inspired and they're, when the Word of God makes impact or people say they're delivered. It's fascinating to me, you know. Uprooting rejection was a lot of hard work. But you know, when putting the book together, getting the testimonies of what it did in people, that inspires me to work hard. So that's the reward. There is an element, you do come to the point where that was, I feel good that I worked hard in itself. I'm tired for a good reason, not because I stayed up till 3 a.m. playing video games or watching YouTube videos, but that is a reward. But I like what it does. I like inspiring men. I like seeing people transformed. So that is what keeps me going. I'm willing to work my butt off for that reward. Yep. Good. Very good questions, guys. All right.